Good evening and welcome. Good to see you all here. Today is September the 6th, 2011. And yesterday we observed the appearance day of Sri Radha, also known as Radhashtami. And Radha is Krishna's divine feminine counterpart. She is the divine feminine energy. And Radha is the female form of the divine energy. As we said many, many times here, you cannot have male divinity without female divinity. Sorry. Doesn't work that way. You need the balance. So there are many manifestations of the male and female principle in Vedic understanding, in yoga philosophy. Many. Arguably, the most prominent is Radha and Krishna. Sita and Ram are also prominent. Shiva and Parvati are also very prominent. Lakshmi and Narayan. But Lakshmi and Narayan, they are the two on the right-hand side there. They are Radha and Krishna. But Radha and Krishna is more the familiar form of God. Whereas Lakshmi and Narayan on the right is more the formal form. Because we always think of approaching God in a very formal manner. We bow down. We express awe and reverence. We're on our best behavior. We mind our P's and Q's. There's a protocol. Like when you meet the Queen or the Prime Minister. There's a protocol. There's a protocol when you meet God. So, you know, you want to know the protocol. So, with Lakshmi and Narayan, it's very formal. It's like a palace or a court setting. So, must follow the protocol. Radha and Krishna is a little more casual.
Take it easy.
Come on, run in the forest. We're playing with the cows. We do a little cow herding. We're going to milk. We're going to play some games. We're going to go swim in the river. So, it depends what you like. I like the latter. Yeah, it's up to you. So Radha and Krishna is the essence of God in loving exchange. And Radha is another way of explaining Radha's function. She is the pleasure potency of God. The feminine energy is the pleasure potency. Sometimes Krishna is described as the energetic source, and the goddess is described as the energetic and the energy, the manifestation of the energetic. The male energetic source cannot manifest itself without the benefit of the energy, which is always feminine. So these two are inseparable.
Shakti.
You know this term? Shakti. Shakti means power, energy. So another way to describe it is Maya is energy. Now everybody, a lot of people know what Maya means. And you say, well, Maya means illusion. And this is the grip of illusion that we all come under here in the material world. Most of us know this. But that is the Mahamaya, or the external energy of the Godhead. The material world is an external manifestation of the Godhead's energy. So it is called Maya, or Mahamaya, the great Maya, the great illusion, where we think that we are these bodies. We think that we are feminine. We think we are masculine. We think we are from Hungary. We think we are from Canada or Ireland. And we have all these conceptions. Are these things not true? Yes, but temporarily so, only. There is also an internal energy of the Godhead. We call, what kind of Maya do we call this? If the external is Mahamaya, the internal is called Yogamaya. Yogamaya. Yogamaya is the spiritual energy of the Godhead. Do you see that walking down the road or down Main Street? No. Not usually. You would have to have the eyes to see. Radha is the internal energy of the Godhead. We all see the Mahamaya and we get whacked by it every day. If you wish to disagree, no problem. But I get whacked by it every day. The Yogamaya is something one must qualify oneself to enter into. And then one becomes part of the Leela, the divine pastimes. Can you become part of the divine pastimes? Yes, you can. But you need a invitation. An invitation. It doesn't come in the post. But it comes somehow. When you get the invitation, you can become part of the Yogamaya, the divine Leela. So Lakshmi, who you see on the right and all the way on the left, that is both Lakshmi, she is Yogamaya, internal energy. Does she exist in the material sphere? Yes. But she also exists in the spiritual realm. Radha in the center is part also of the Yogamaya, the internal energy of the Godhead. She exists in the spiritual realm and appears sometimes in the material realm. You've heard of Durga. You've heard of Kali. You've heard of Chamunda. Who else? Saraswati. There's Saraswati there in the middle, in the Balinese triptych. That's Saraswati in the middle. They exist in the Mahamaya, only in the external energy. They don't necessarily exist in the spiritual realm. Durga doesn't exist there. And Chamunda doesn't, and certainly not Kali. Because Kali is, she's there to slice and dice. When Durga, who is the essence of Maya, the material energy, when she gets angry, something pops out from between her eyes. Kali. And when that happens, run for the hills. Because a lot of destruction will take place. Hell hath no fury like a goddess scorned. Like Durga scorned. Exactly. There is truth to this statement. Naturally. So yesterday was the celebration of the appearance of Radha. And Radha and Krishna are the lovers. So we here in the material world, what do we all yearn for? Tell me. Love. We're either thinking about love, or hoping for love, or trying to expand our love, or trying to get rid of our love. Get a new love. Different things about love. Very few people are not thinking about love at least once daily. You can correct me. Love for money. Love for money? Yeah, but I'm not talking about that love. But you're right. So God, if we are made in the image and likeness of God, the Bible says we are made in the image and likeness of God. Is that true? Of course it is. The image, it means this is the image. God looks like this. Maybe a little better version. And likeness means we have similarities. Where do we get our desires and our needs and our urges and our inclinations? From God. So, love is a big deal in God's world too. Not just us. It's very important. So God plays his divine Leela as Krishna with Radha. It's lovely. And you can join if you like. And our Leela that we play here, a little less divine, but we're busy playing it, is that we enter into a loving relationship with generally a partner, a husband, a wife. We try for one. We don't always get one. Sometimes we get more than one. In the Indian culture, usually one. Not always, but usually. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for happiness in that through a lifetime. But then, it comes to an end. Even you may have a loving, wonderful relationship of two people cherishing each other and showing great respect and regard for each other. And how can there be love without great respect and regard? How? But then they grow old and somebody dies first. It ends. That's the problem in the material world, unfortunately. Does that mean we shouldn't have a love? No, not necessarily. But we also are confronted with the sobering fact that it will come to an end. Our relationship that we cultivate with God in loving exchange with God, does it come to an end upon death? No. Doesn't. It's eternal. So we should not neglect this relationship. You can have your relationship with your loved one, with your husband, your wife, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your partner. Your children, your friends, your parents, etc. But it is most important to develop your loving relationship to God. Because that one's for keeps. That one will sustain no matter how many births you are required to take. Until you are no longer required to take any more births. How does that come about? You stop loving matter. You stop loving Mahamaya. You get out of her snare. If you have won, I've said this repeatedly, at the time of death, if you have one and one only material desire means connected to the body, connected to matter, connected to Maya, connected to the physical realm, you will then do what? You'll come back. You'll get another body. Why? Because you have a desire. You'll need a body. You'll need a vehicle. If you want to drive from here to Galway, you'll have to hire a car. You need a body to fulfill that desire. And how many bodies can you have? As many as you like. Really? Unlimited. So you have to come to the point where you have no more material desires. Then you can reach the spiritual realm. You can enter into the divine Leela. God is waiting for you to become unensnared by Maya and come to the party. If you ever gone to a party and you knock on the door, you open the door and they go, "Oh, here you are. Where were you? We've been waiting for you to come." Ever, has that ever happened to you? Of course it has. "Oh, now you're here. Wonderful." That's how it'll be in the spiritual realm. They party a little differently, but... and it doesn't necessarily end. So, I recommend it. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit about astrology. I have done Vedic astrology now for 34 years. And Krishna threw me a bone a couple days ago, and I thank him for that. I had a couple of birth charts, supposedly, of Krishna. And I've studied birth charts of various avatars, incarnations of God. Saints, high beings, yogis, realized souls, kings, queens, all kinds of wonderful people that I know personally. So this has been a study of mine for 34 years. And I had two or three charts that were offered and were said to be Krishna's chart. And I don't know. It never rang true for me. It never made sense. And then when I was reading this particular commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, which is the story of Krishna's pastimes when he was on the earth 5,000 years ago, in the bottom of the commentary it said, "Oh, there's a book called the Manikya, and in that book, it's an astrological treatise, it gives Krishna's birth chart as the following." And there it is. So I wrote that down and I began to study that just a couple of days ago. And I thought, yeah, this is it. This is actually the one. So I got very excited about that in a quiet way. And I know you don't know a lot about astrology, but I'd like to just share a little bit of this with you. Because I'm so quietly excited about this. I'm over the moon. And that's very important here. And this is why. So let me say preliminarily that when a planet is exalted in the sky, it has reached the pinnacle of its strength to deliver its benefits in full measure. Exalted planets are not rare, but most people do not have them. Even one exalted planet could take a person and lift them very high in life. So what is the chance of having an exalted planet? 1 in 12. A planet, there are 12 signs, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, etc. Out of those 12 signs, a planet is exalted or having reached the pinnacle of its strength in 1 out of 12. So you have a 1 in 12 shot. That's not very much. So, like I say, most people don't have them. Some people might have one, maybe two. Then you'll find a person might have three. It's like trying to pick lottery numbers. Exactly. When you get into the realm of 5 planets exalted, 6, 7, That's, you're in avatar realm. That's how you know. That's when God comes down. It's very easy to see. It's not hard. Because this science is, you know, since creation, science of astrology. Now, the next best thing to having a planet exalted is to have a planet in its own sign. Also, very, very powerful, very distinguished energy. Either or would be fantastic. Now, planets in their own sign are a little easier to get because generally each planet has two signs. So, for example, Mercury has two signs. Do you know them? Gemini and Virgo. So if Mercury is in Gemini or if Mercury is in Virgo. Gemini. Mithun. Actually, Mercury is not a good example because Kanya is its sign of exaltation in the Mercury case. Let's take Venus. Venus has two signs. Vrishabh, Taurus, and Tula. Yeah. Libra. Shukra. So Venus is in its own sign, but Venus is exalted in the sign of Pisces, mean. Right? Okay, so that's how you know. You see how many planets are exalted. So for Krishna, he had moon exalted in the first house. Each avatar is born in a planetary dynasty. They're connected to a planetary dynasty. Rama, when Lord Ram was here, he is part of the Surya or solar dynasty. The sun comes down through the line of the sun from the sun god. And you can trace this. Krishna was part of the lunar dynasty. Chandravansh. The moon dynasty. You see? So, he has exalted moon on the ascendant. The moon is exalted in Taurus. He has sun in its own sign. Sun has one sign only, its own sign. What sign is the sun in its own sign? Do you know? Leo. Leo. Where is the sun right now in the sky?
Leo.
Sun is in Leo according to the Vedic calculation from middle of August till the middle of September. This is different than Western. Western calculation is incorrect. Astronomers will tell you that. Vedic astrologers will tell you that. But millions of people follow Western astrology. What can be said? Sun is in its own sign in the fourth house. Leo. Sun in Leo. There. In the fifth house, here, Mercury is exalted in Virgo. Right there. In the sixth house, at the bottom, Venus is in Libra in its own sign with Saturn. Saturn is exalted in Libra. In the seventh house, Rahu in Scorpio. Nothing distinguishing about that. In the ninth house, Mars is exalted in Capricorn. Kuja in Makara. And finally, in the 11th house up here, Jupiter is in Pisces in its own sign. There you have it. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4 exalted planets and 1, 2, 3 planets in their own sign. There are 7 major planets. 4 are exalted, 3 are in their own sign. Do you see this with humans? No, you don't. No, you don't. Very rare. So, what's interesting is Moon is with Ketu on the ascendant. Moon is somebody who's very loving, kind-hearted, compassionate, which Krishna was. But with Ketu, it means a complication at birth. Almost always when you see a negative planet like Ketu in the first house, you've got a complication at birth. And usually what we know as a complication is you've got to be taken out by forceps, or you came too soon, or you came too late, or you weren't breathing properly. This is how we know it. But there's another kind of complication at birth, and that is when you lose your mother or your parents. As soon as he came out of the womb, he was taken from his parents and taken to a different place and put with foster parents. Why? Because he was under threat of being killed. There was a prophecy that the eighth child of Devaki, his mother, born to his mother, would be the child that would kill the evil king, Kamsa, who was actually his uncle. So, Ketu means violence, threat, danger, difficulty. And Kamsa had killed the seven brothers and sisters that came before him. Killed them all. They're all boys. Killed them all. Just to be safe. And was ready for the number eight because that was going to be the one. So the Ketu moon means separation from the mother. And then the planet that rules the chart, which is Venus. Venus rules Taurus, is down here in the sixth house. And that, not in every case, but in many cases, means adoption. It's a yoga for adoption. So he wasn't adopted. He went to a different family.
He has all of his moon with like Ketu or Rahu?
Yeah, his moon is with Ketu. Yeah. So,
And Rahu in Scorpio.
And Rahu's in Scorpio. So, the love of his life was Radha. Krishna was born in a Kshatriya family, a family of kings and rulers. But he was taken from that family and moved to an agricultural family, a dairy farming family, cowherds. That's what he was moved to. Dairy farmers, as we'd say nowadays. Right? Moon is dairy farmers. Cows in Taurus is the earth, the land, agriculture, everything to do with that. And what is the symbol for Taurus? And back in those days, how do you plow a field? With a bull and a plow. So the bull is the symbol of agriculture and sustenance. It's dharma. Right? So he was born into a major period, planetary period, for those of you who have had your chart done, of the moon. Moon was in the constellation of Rohini, ruled by the moon in the sign of Venus. Moon in the sign of Venus. Oh, he likes love. This makes you very, very romantic. And this guy was very romantic. And he played the flute. But he played the flute like nobody played the flute. So it was really distracting when he played the flute. People's lives would come to a screeching halt when they heard Krishna's flute, and they'd run off. Oh, where is he? Let's go find him. Like this. Really? So he goes and he lives in the family of a cowherd in a agricultural family under his moon period. And there he grows up near the love of his life, Radha, the most beautiful woman in the universe. No, beyond the universe. Oh, she is breathtakingly beautiful. Why? Because she's the goddess of fortune. She is distractingly beautiful. And so is he. So, he spent the early part of his life running around, herding cows, messing around with Radha and the gopis, the cowherd girls, and his buddies, the cowherd boys, and did this Leela. Then he had to go to the city, Mathura, and his whole life changed. And he went into the prince mode. He returned to his birth dharma, which was to be a prince. And he had to go and put to death this evil king, which was the prophecy. So then he went into his major period of Mars. Mars is the planet of war or kingship, fighting. He was here to get rid of a couple of demons. So Kamsa was the first. Well, he wasn't the first, but he was one. So there you have it. But the seventh house, Rahu, this is your question. He never returns to the love of his life. No. He becomes a king, steps into his rulership role, has his kingdom, which he builds off the coast of Dwarka, which he built on an island off the coast of Dwarka, which is Gujarat, in west northwest India. And when he left the planet 125 years later, he sank it into the sea. What did they just find off the coast of Gujarat in Dwarka about within the last 5 years, 10 years? They found the city sunk off the coast. The what do you call them? Archaeologists found it.
Just recently.
It's all underwater.
I've seen on the YouTube.
Yeah, no, it's there. You can check it out. Dwarka. D-W-A-R-K-A. Dwarka or Dwarka. Yeah. Gujarat. So he built that city and he got married to several wives. Different wives. Pardon? 108. 108. But there's the difference between Krishna and the average king. Is he built a palace for each wife. And you say, oh, well, okay, so if he's wealthy, he could build a palace for each wife. Yes, and then he expanded himself into 108 forms and lived with each wife individually in each palace. There's the trick. No. 125.
What mom's saying is like, they were actually captured by the
correct. That's right.
By the demon.
There was a demon or a bad guy, powerful king, who had captured many other kings and took their wives and imprisoned the wives in the palace prison and killed all their husbands. Krishna came and killed this guy, this demon guy who had done this. And therefore, all of these women were husbandless. Their husbands were dead. Who will protect us now? Was their argument. no one will want us because we were married and now our husbands are dead. Now we're widows. Who will want us? Who will take us? Who will look after us? And he said, I will. So, exactly true. So that's why he did it. You know. So he did it in a gallant and noble manner. Not only will I look after you, but I will build you a palace. And I'll live with you all the time. Wonderful. So I could go on and on. I won't spend all our time on this. He didn't. So if the seventh house is the relationship he was with her. Now here's, I'll tell you what else is interesting here. When I see this in the chart, if there's a connection between the ninth house, spirituality, and the seventh house, marriage, then that is a yoga or planetary combination for a marriage made in heaven. A heaven-sent relationship. I've seen it several times. And that means that those two persons are meant to be together because generally they have a past life connection. Right? And they will pick up where they left off from a previous lifetime. That's one meaning. The other meaning is that for a man, she would be the goddess of fortune. Ninth house is the house of bhagya, good fortune. And she will bring that into his life and vice versa. For a woman who has this and she marries a man like that, he will be the source of good fortune in her life. But it's not just a connection between the seventh house of Scorpio here. So Mars rules Scorpio and Mars is in the ninth house. That's what I'm explaining. Only Mars is exalted. So what kind of woman is he going to get? She's going to be, in his case, the goddess of fortune herself. In one manifestation? No. All of these women that were married to Krishna were the goddess of fortune. They were all the goddess of fortune in various manifestations. It couldn't be otherwise. He wouldn't hook up with a human. No offense. Only with the divine being. And Mars is what kind of a woman, Catherine? Strong woman, but a warrior woman, right? So she wants a warrior woman. He's a king. Many a man, as you ladies know, men love strong women. They're real drawn to them until they sit next to them for a while. And we find out, ooh, gee, I'm getting scorched by the energy. Oh, yes, correct. Not many men can handle strong women. Fiery women. I'm not saying they don't have to be queens per se, but most of them are in one way, shape, or form, as you know. So Mars is, exalted Mars is this kind of woman, you know.
Maybe he had a girlfriend, but not as a wife.
Well, no, you can have it as a wife as long as you know how to. Treat her. You know, you don't tell queens what to do. It doesn't work. It backfires. You ladies know that, all of you. All the ladies here have got big smiles on their faces. This is for the podcast that will be on the, just because they can't see you. You know what I'm saying. You don't tell them what to do. You suggest. Well, dear, do you think you might do that? Yeah, sure, I could do that. Oh, great, thanks. That's how you do it. If you approach anybody in the right way, if somebody loves you, they will do anything for you. Why wouldn't they? I don't just mean a woman for a man for a woman, of course. But you must approach them correctly. Well, my friend Krishna was a master of this. He was the guy. He wrote the first book on, what's the latest book on dating called? And there's so many of them out there. He wrote the first book. So now another thing, you see, Venus is the planet of love, yeah? So we look to Venus to see, you know, how lucky in love we will be. So he has Venus in its own sign. Again, we find, well, this guy is Mr. Amorous. He is very romantic. That shows it again. And Venus with Saturn means, again, past life connections. Saturn means somebody from the past. Is it earlier in this lifetime? Sometimes. But sometimes it is. Or in most cases, it's a past life connection. And the two souls have come back together. Recently, I've done charts for quite a few people who are in their 40s, 50s, even 60s. And they had a marriage, and they've had children, and that's all done. And that marriage ended at some point in time. And they've hooked up with the high school sweetheart. The high school sweetheart went and got married. And both of them had gone off in different directions. And now they come back, still the same feelings for each other that they had when they were 16. It's kind of wild, you know. And they're like, we're so happy. Great. Excellent. So that's like a Saturn Venus thing. Okay. Questions? Comments?
Yes, Drew, you said something about
returning love
or not returning to Krishna? Does anyone else hear that?
Not returning to the love.
He didn't return to her.
He did not return to Radha in that lifetime. He went on to take his position as a prince king and look after a lot of people in the kingdom. And have battles with various nefarious characters, which was why he came to the earth to kill off a few of these unwanted guys. And he married different queens, but he never returned to the love of his life, Radha. But that's what this Rahu shows. But don't let it disappoint you too much, because his loving exchange, his lila with Radha, goes on eternally. Somewhere in the universe, and of course, always in the spiritual world. Always. So it's not really a sad story. It just shows you how, in this particular, to the extent that this incarnation was played out, there's your Rahu in the 7,000. Now, does anybody have any stories, experiences, coincidental, serendipitous experiences that have happened you'd like to share with us to inspire us? Liz?
I don't know if it would inspire you, I'm one of these people that has two exalted planets. And I'm selling my house because I'm moving to India next month. And because of the time that's in it, I wasn't sure whether my house would sell very quickly. So I didn't want to rent it because I wanted it in good condition to sell. And so I put an ad up on house sitters on the internet. And two people contacted me. I came to see me yesterday. Who also have two exalted planets. And Drew said it was a very rare thing for somebody to have. Mm. And I said, oh, well, Drew told me it's very rare, and the two of you have it, so it's not that rare, is it? And they said, well, we don't know anybody else in our circle. So I just thought it was very interesting. That, and the woman said that she was looking for a house, that in her mind she saw the house that she wanted to live in, and had a number 3 on the door. And I have an on my door, mm-hmm. which looks like mm-hmm.
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's just very interesting the way the whole thing happened. I've never met these people before. I've got them on the internet. They arrived at my door. And there's all of this kind of... And I felt immediately that they were people I'd be very happy living in my house.
Yes, well, I've known these people since 2003. They are both my clients. And I calculated their marriage time when they got married. So these are wonderful people. And Aaron's art is like 3 or 4 pieces of his art in the kitchen as we speak.
Mm. Well, that was very interesting.
Yeah. That's a great story. So the three was the om. Sarah is very, very mystical.
My house was called She Scale, and that was the attraction for her, because that's a fairy story in Irish. The She and Scale story. And
yeah.
She's writing a book at the moment about fairies.
Very nice.
Very interesting, yeah. So even on the internet, you find them.
Small world.
Both like attract like.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is, Helen?
Mm-hmm.
But is that unusual that they also have 2 exalted planets?
Well, 2 exalted planets, I mean, you can see, you'll find people with 2 exalted planets. There you go. So, but the vast majority of people have no exalted planets. I have no exalted planets. Most people don't have them. They're not easy to come by.
And here's 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I personally know lots of people with exalted planets. But, you know, not the masses. Right? Okay, anybody else with an interesting story we want to hear?
Well, I've been working in the jewelry store, and I haven't been able to complete sale. So anyway, so I was getting ready this morning, and I was talking to Krishna, and I said, just wondering, Krishna, if you could help me, just one sale, just so I could actually see that I can do this. And a guy comes in and goes, ring the window. I was like, yes, please. And then he wants to have a look, and so I show up to him, and he goes, yeah, I like it, it's one for X amount, so. And I say, sure, this is it? He goes, yes, I'll take Krishna. And I said, oh, okay, great. I was like, thanks, Krishna. So, yeah, so he's working.
Very good. He's working and you're working.
So it was effortless. I didn't know what to do. I did put it down to have a chat with Krishna.
Well, good. I think it would be important to close the sale, because then you're finishing the task, the deed,
yeah.
And you're bringing it to fruition and to completion. The only reason there should be a problem is if you have some negative attitude toward money or about money, and that would be an underlying belief that you don't deserve it, you're not worthy, you're not good enough, or money's the root of all evil. That's a popular one. Even though the quote is, the love of money is the root of all evil. Of course, we've changed that to say that money's the root of all evil. But money is actually personified by Lakshmi. Lakshmi, who's with Narayan, which is Vishnu, God, is the goddess of fortune. And when she appeared in the story of the churning of the ocean of milk, she appeared out of that ocean. And present were all of these gods or higher beings, celestials from higher planetary systems, as well as the demons from the lower planetary systems. So you had all of these dynamic individuals, and they all wanted her because she was drop dead gorgeous. And she sauntered out with her particular walk, and she swayed from side to side. She had full hips and water pot like breasts, as it's described. And she was very beautiful, very fragrant, and dressed with all kinds of gems and jewels. And she walked and along the lines of the gods and the demons. Each one wanted her for his wife. But Vishnu, who was helping them at this, with this particular task, was the last one for her to reach. And even though there were some very dynamic persons there, and certainly worthy of marriage, all of them had an underlying motivation of ego. In other words, if there was one that was very intelligent, then he knew he was intelligent. See how intelligent I am. So if one was good looking, then he knew he was good looking, like this. Or one seemed bright, but he had this dark side. You've met this guy, right? And so it went like that until she met Vishnu. And Vishnu was the only guy who wasn't falling all over her. He could take her or leave her. So this was very compelling to Lakshmi. And there was no presence of ego in Vishnu, in God. And so she aligned herself with God. The goddess of fortune, wealth, money, and success is only allied with God eternally. Here in the material world, the goddess of fortune will align herself with different people in life, but only temporarily. So a person may be wealthy in this lifetime, may be wealthy for a few lifetimes, or may be wealthy in this lifetime, then lose everything. Well, we've seen this recently. How many people did this happen to? So the goddess of fortune is known as Chanchala. Unsteady. Flickering. And now you see her. Now you don't. Anyway, bottom line is wealth and prosperity and good fortune and money is a symptom of the Godhead. Poverty is not a symptom of the Godhead. Now, if you are a yogi or a yogini and you're practicing yoga and meditation and you take a vow of poverty, that's fine. But you are voluntarily giving up comfort and a comfortable life. There's nothing wrong with that. And you can fix your mind on God. But to say that there's something wrong with money and wealth and prosperity is incorrect. There's nothing wrong with it unless you have a contaminated mentality. Then there's something wrong with it. It's a person's mentality that contaminates the wealth. The wealth is not contaminated in and of itself. So selling a jewel or a piece of jewelry to somebody, as long as it is what you say it is, if it's a diamond, it must be a diamond. We can't say it's a diamond and it's a piece of glass, because then now we're in the contaminated side of things. But if it is what we say it is, and you're providing that, especially with jewelry, you are actually representing on some level the goddess of fortune. That's the way you have to look at it. Now, if you're selling a piece, obviously you have to make a profit. That's what stores do. That's what businesses do. But if you're making a profit that's 10,000 times its value, there's something wrong with that. But if you're making a reasonable profit for a product, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
So how you set your mind, that your mindset is very important when you make money, and, you know.
Yeah, if you, you know, here's a very simple example, and I've seen this hundreds and hundreds of times, so have you. So a person sets out to make money. Now, money should never be the purpose of life, but just for our example, your dharma, your work, should be your purpose, not money. We need money to live, but money is not the focus. Money can never be the focus. Otherwise, you may make the money, but it will never satisfy you. You'll feel empty. I don't care how many Mercedes Benzes you drive. So anyway, back to the example. So a person sets out to become wealthy, to make a lot of money. That's his conscious desire. He works toward that. He makes a lot of money, becomes wealthy. Great. He fulfilled his desire. Then he loses everything. Was that part of his desire? No. That was never part of his desire. He didn't think, yeah, I'll make the money and then I'll go and lose it all. Who thinks like that? No one. So his conscious desire, yes, I'll make the money. His subconscious belief underlying is, I don't deserve to have money. Money's bad. My father said, rich people are bad. Money is the root of all evil, or whatever the belief might be. Any negative underlying belief will sabotage.
Okay, you're going to get money to help other people.
Well, we're not, yes, but we're not talking about that right now. We're talking about his negative belief, and now he's lost all the money. And he stays sitting here going like this. Why did I lose all my money? And then maybe he goes again. And he sets out again. And he makes another fortune. And what happens? He loses it again. You know people like this. Why would he lose it again? Why? Because he hasn't changed his belief. Underlying belief. Correct. He doesn't know that, but he still hasn't changed it.
How can he change it? Just
he can't. One must become
aware.
Conscious, aware. You have to make, to become a conscious person means what? To make everything within you that is unconscious, conscious.
That's healing.
That's the definition of consciousness. To bring the shadow to light. Isn't that consciousness? Isn't that self-awareness? Isn't that what we're all sitting here for? Right? So once you get in touch with this negative belief, underlying belief, then we can change it. And what you're saying, yeah, well, maybe he's making money for the wrong reasons. You know, maybe he needs to have a better intention. Yeah. I will take this money. If I become wealthy, I know how I could help so many people. It's a very good intention. If your work is reflective of your essential nature, then your work will fulfill you. Number one. And number two, you will make a contribution to the world around you, but happily so, not unhappily. If you're not doing your dharma, if you're working, you have a job, It pays money. I'm not criticizing you. You need money to live. You got bills. But if it's not your dharma, it won't satisfy you, even though it may make a contribution to others. And then we get the 5 o'clock Friday syndrome, which means, it's 5 o'clock yet. Oh, I can't wait to get off. Oh, it's only Wednesday. I can't wait till it's Friday. I can't wait to get out of here. That's the 5 o'clock Friday syndrome. Yeah, so ladies and gentlemen, she's not, perhaps, doing her dharma. So it's good, if you can, to do your dharma. Narsingha is a incarnation of Vishnu. We've been talking about God. And Narsingha is half man, half lion. So he's got a lion head and a lion paws, claws, and a man's body, more or less. Why? Because there is a very powerful demon in the universe in one of the millennia, and he had overthrown the gods, the celestials, and taken over, and he had gone and performed very severe and difficult penances and austerities for thousands of years until he got this boon, benediction, from Brahma, the creator. And he became very powerful. And he said to Brahma, he said, I want to become immortal here in the universe. And Brahma said, sorry, I can't do immortal. I'm not even immortal. How can I give you immortality? Well, he said, well, in which case, can you give me this? Can you make sure I cannot be killed by a man, an animal, a weapon, or a god? Yeah, I could give you that. Can you guarantee that I will not be killed in daytime or at night? Yeah, I could give you that. Can you guarantee that I will never be killed on land, in the air, or in the water? Yeah, I could give you that. Can you guarantee that I can't be killed by any weapon made by man or God? Yeah, I can give you that. You can have that too. Well, I'm immortal. For all intents and purposes, I've just got myself immortality. And Brahma went away, kind of scratching his head, you know, geez, what did I just do there? I'm not sure. So, this guy's name was Hiranyakashipu, which means gold and soft beds, essentially money and sex. That's what it refers to. Most people in the material world, they're thinking about money and sex. Sex and money, one or the other. Not a day goes by. So that was his name. And he went on to defeat, as I said earlier, all the gods and powerful beings in the universe. He took over. And because he had performed all this austerity, he'd got this great boon. No one could kill him, defeat him. But while he was away doing all this penance and difficult austerity to gain his power, his wife was pregnant. Now, we're not talking about Kali Yuga. We're in Kali Yuga right now, Iron Age. So people only live for 100 years in this age. In the golden age, people live for 100,000 years. In the silver age, they live for 10,000 years. In the bronze age, they live for 1,000 years. In this age, they live for 100 years. So this would have been Treta Yuga, where they lived for 10,000 years. So he spent a few thousand years. So everything was, you know, it's kind of, what do you call it? The proportions are different, right? So his wife went away while he performed austerities, and she went, ended up with sages at an ashram, and these holy men in the ashram kind of looked after her while the child was in the womb. And they would listen to discourses like we're talking about today, because the sages would talk about these things daily, and spirituality and God and meditation and all of these things. The child in the womb hears all of that, ladies, from the beginning. Once that soul enters the womb, that soul hears you on some level. So always remember that and read to the child in the womb, even from the beginning. Whatever, however you want your child to become, you start from the moment you are pregnant to bring that into being. Does it work? Oh yes, it works. I know directly. That's what you do. So that's this boy, Prahlad. Prahlad means joy, joyful, happy. He heard all of this. Then when Hiranyakashipu, money and sex, finished his austerities, went back and overthrew all the gods and took over, his wife rejoined him. The child had been born. And so he sent him off to school to learn politics, the science of friends and enemies. But Prahlad had been spiritualized, and all he wanted to do was chant the names of God and surrender to God. That's all he wanted to do. So Aranyakashipu became very frustrated because he'd have the child come and say, "Well, my son, sit up here on my lap now. Tell me what you have learned in school. How to manipulate people. How to overpower them. How to become successful in the world. How to kill people off. Tell me all about what you have learned." "Well, I have learned that one must surrender oneself to God, and Vishnu is the most important person, and you should chant his name." Well, he became very, very upset hearing this. "Get off my lap. Go back to school, learn properly." So this went on a few times. Nothing could change this child. He was spiritual. And finally, Hiranyakashipu said, take this child and kill him. Kill him off. So they took him and they threw him off a cliff. He survived. They boiled him in oil. He survived. They fed him to the lions, or to the wild animals. He survived. Whatever they did to him, he survived. He couldn't be killed because Vishnu was protecting him. He couldn't be killed. Vishnu invisibly was protecting him because he was fully surrendered unto Vishnu. His love was placed at the feet of Vishnu. So finally, he came wandering back in. Hiranyakashipu looking at him. "I thought they'd kill you off." "Father, I don't know why you won't listen to reason. I'm trying to tell you everything for your greatest benefit, and you seem not to listen to me." By this time, Hiranyakashipu had enough. He said, "Where is this Vishnu of yours?" And Prahlad says, "Well, he's everywhere, of course." And he pointed, because he was in he was in his court area, which was pillars, you know, with a roof and pillars, but no walls to the outside, right? And he says, is he in this pillar? Well, yes, of course he's in the pillar. So Hiranyakashipu takes out his sword and he strikes the pillar with the sword. The pillar bursts open and out comes Nrsingadev, half man, half lion, Vishnu, God. And he picks up Hiranyakashipu and, like a cat, slaps him around a little bit, plays him, because cats like to do that, knocks him around a bit, and finally takes him, puts him on his lap, and bifurcates him. He opens up his belly and his entrails come out, and he ends his life. And that's the end of the big demon. So why did it happen like this? Well, it was dusk. It wasn't day. It wasn't night. It wasn't indoors. That's the one I forgot. It wasn't outdoors. He said, I don't want to be able to be killed indoors or outdoors. It wasn't indoors. It wasn't outdoors. It had no walls, just pillars. It was indoors and outdoors. And he wasn't killed by any weapon made by man. He wasn't killed by a man. He wasn't killed by an animal. It was an animal man. Half man, half animal, but it was God. And he couldn't be killed on land, in the air, in the water. He put him on his lap. And he used his nails, claws. So he had to act in accordance with the benediction given by Brahma. So the mantra we sang at the very beginning was to Narasingha. That's to him. So he's the protecting person. Nara means man, and Singha means lion. Sometimes they say Singha, and sometimes they say Simha, and sometimes they say Nrisimha, Nrisingha. In the Punjab, where these good people come from, they're not Sikhs. Markandeya and his mother are not Sikhs. They're Brahmins. But the Sikhs wear the turban, and they don't cut their beard. They don't cut their hair, traditionally. And their last name is? Singh. Singh, which is lion. It's a warrior race.
They used to carry
the little sword, little dagger. Now, what city do you know of this name? Singapore. Pur comes from the Sanskrit Pura or Puram, which means town. Singapore is the town of the lion, the lion's town. Nrsingadev. Singapura. And of course in Thailand you can get Singa beer. You can get here too, I think. But Singa. Okay, so maybe we did a little bit of chant and we'll do a little bit of meditation. I'll call it an evening. Allow the stress, tension, fear, and apprehension to drain from your body. Totally. completely relax, breathe and let go. Deeply relax. High above, envision a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light coming down, down, down from the heavens, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, your torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, and into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens above and grounded in the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. All right. You're in a forest. It's a very, very beautiful forest. Many trees, many varieties of trees, fruit-bearing trees, flower-bearing trees, creepers and vines. Very beautiful, very fragrant. Many different kinds of aromas and fragrances wafted by the breeze. This is an amazing, wonderful place. As you walk through the forest, you come upon a clearing, a glade, an opening in the forest. And as you step onto this clearing, there's somebody there waiting for you in the clearing. Who is that person or that being waiting for you there? How do they greet you? What is their disposition? What is their state of mind? What do they say to you? What do they ask you? They ask you to do something. They want you to do something. What is it they ask you to do? And what do you say? Will you do it? Are you prepared to do it? Do you want to do it? Do you agree? Do you disagree? What do you say? What is the result? What is the outcome? Continue with the meditation until you come to a place or a point of resolution. And when you're done, slowly return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. We invite you for tea and whatever other delights we have out there. I made some dokla, but I don't think I made enough.
First come, first serve.
I don't think I made enough for this many people.
Cheers.
But you're welcome to it. Thank you for coming. Om Tat Sat.
Hare Krishna.
What is the first Tuesday in September? Does anybody... This is September. In October. Does anybody know?
The 4th of October.
4th of October? So you're welcome again. 4th of October at 8 p.m. if you're inclined to come. And you can bring your friends, whoever you'd like to bring. And see you then. Thank you.
Thank you.